good to be with you tonight. Tonight, I'd like to look at Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27. This was kind of a last-minute sermon change that I decided to do, called A Shelter in a Time of Storm. I don't know why I decided to do that, but all the events that are taking place right now reminded me of Acts chapter 27. So I want to look at that chapter tonight and make some comments about that. Let's go ahead and read the first part of Acts chapter 27, kind of to set the stage. Acts chapter 27, starting in verse 1. Paul sails for Rome. And when it was decided that we would sail for Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius. And embarking in a ship of Adramyttium, which was about to sail to the ports along the east coast of Asia, we put to sea accompanied by Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica. The next day, we put in at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends and be cared for. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus, because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea along the coast of Sicilia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, to Lycia, and the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing for Italy and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty off Sindus, and the wind did not allow us to go farther, we sailed under the lee of Crete off Salome. Coasting along it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, near which was the city of Lycia. Since much time had passed and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that the voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives." But the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and to the owner of the ship than to what Paul said. And because the harbor was not suitable to spend the winter in, the majority decided to put out to sea from there on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, the harbor of Crete, facing both southwest and northwest, and spend the winter there. So what we see here is that Paul is on his way to Rome, and this was following nearly 2 years of imprisonment at Caesarea. And he's on a vessel, and we'll see later in the chapter that there's about 276 people on board, and they leave the harbor of Fair Havens, and they encounter a storm. And storms can come up quickly, as we are well aware of. And certainly we are able to know more about storms and have some advance warning, but you know, is what we've seen in the last few days. It's unpredictable sometimes as to the way things will go. But here we see that Paul knows that this is going to be a problem that he wasn't listening to. And so I want to go ahead and look at verses 13 through 20. Verses 13 through 20, because we can see the vulnerability that they have in the storm. Verses 13 through 20. "Now when the south wind blew gently, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they weighed anchor and sailed along Crete close to the shore. But soon a tempestuous wind called the northeaster struck down from the land. And when the ship was caught and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and were driven along, running under the lee of a small island called Cotta. We managed with difficulty to secure the ship's boats. After hoisting it up, they used supports to undergird the ship. Then, fearing that they would run aground on the surface, they lowered the gear, and thus they were driven along. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned." And so you could see here from the description, this is a very violent storm. In the English Standard Version, it talks about this being a northeaster, and you've heard that phrase before. Some of the other translations have that called a Euroclydon, which it means something that's very violent, and it does mean a northeasterly wind. And the Euroclydon was the sailor's term for a strong northeasterly wind. It comes from two words. You know, one word is Greek and one's Latin, and the Greek word refers to the east wind, and the Latin word refers to the north wind. And the northeast wind would come down from Asia Minor, and it was so fierce that it was like what we would call a hurricane or a typhoon type of proportion. And so here you can picture them bobbing up and down and being tumbled and beaten by the wind. And so this description here, you know, talks about the south wind is replaced by the northeastern wind. And this type of storm was a great fear among those who sailed the Mediterranean, because it really rendered a lot of ships useless because they were not able to safely navigate it. In fact, in the Mediterranean, you know, they just called it an ocean graveyard at the coast of North Africa. And archaeologists have discovered the remains of many sunken ships there because of these types of storms. And so, as you read this description here, we know how advanced, you know, we think we are today with handling these types of things. And, you know, Paul had warned about this danger, and here they are in the midst of it. And verse 20 says, it was no small tempest that came upon them. And so this was a very savage storm, and the ship was susceptible to being destroyed. And as we read here, it says that they attempted to secure the ship. How would they do that? Well, I mean, they couldn't, you know, bolt planks to the girders, because that day I don't think they had bolts. But what is described here is they would try to tie or glue planks. And if it was a ship that had a single mast, there was no distribution of the weight on the ship, or no distribution of the stress. If a ship had multiple sails, it could distribute the stress along the entire hull. But many times these ships, especially their single sails, they would begin to split in half because of the stress. And so what they would attempt to do is described here, is they wrap cables around the ship to keep it secured, because they don't want it splitting up into pieces. And so that was a very common thing for mariners in that day to do. It was a procedure called frapping, and they would do that to the ship to keep the ship together. And so that's what's described here, is using ropes or cables or chains for the purpose of securing the ship the best that they can. Of course, the danger here is that it's going to be destroyed, and it's a very critical situation for them, and so they were making use of whatever they could to prevent the loss of the ship. The people in this day, they were accustomed to using cables and strong ropes from one side of the ship to the other to keep the planks tightly together during a storm. And so the rope would be slipped under the bow of the ship and passed along to any part of the hull that they could fasten it to. So they're doing these things just trying to, you know, sometimes you hear the expression today, they held it together with masking tape or and baling wire. You know, they're trying to hold this thing together the best that they can, because the ship is going to be susceptible to destruction in the midst of such a violent storm. And so, you know, there's applications to us spiritually, of course, that people have what we would call storms of life. There are things that they go through in their life, and they just have to hold it together. And they're trying to hold this ship together the best that they can in the midst of this storm that Paul could have easily said, "Well, I told you so." But, you know, Paul wasn't being listened to. He wasn't he was not the person that they considered to be the expert on these kinds of matters. They deferred to the captain. They said, "Yeah, we can handle it." And so they go and they follow him, as it tells us in the account. But, you know, storms sometimes, in the spiritual sense, can have a value, and I think we can learn some some value from this storm as well. Let's read on through the rest of this. You know, chapter 27, starting in verse 21. Since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and have not set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I worship, and he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that will be exactly as I have been told, but we must run aground on some island.' When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors suspected that they were nearing land. So they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. And fearing that we might run on the rocks, they lay down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come." And so, here is very, very interesting that Paul said, you know, you should have listened to me, but you're going to be okay. And in this type of storm, they certainly would have been fearing for their life. So, these men on this ship, in the midst of this kind of storm, would have lost all hope. And so, the value of what Paul has to say here, it's going to mean a lot to them, because they've lost all hope, and he tells them that they still have hope. They really have nothing else to hold on to and nothing, no one to turn to. And so, what the storm can do, in a very real and literal sense here, is it can cause them to clarify their values. And we see that in what they're doing. They are determining what's important and what's not. And so, in a storm, you've got to do that. A storm is going to help you to settle your priorities. Look at verse 18. Verse 18 says that they did that very thing. Verse 18, "Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo." One of my, I won't say it's one of my favorite movies, but it's one that I've seen several times, and it's kind of obscure, and maybe a lot of you haven't seen it, but it's a John Candy movie called Summer Rental, where he takes this family to the beach for the summer. And in one part of the movie, he goes to a fine food establishment called Scully's. And it's not really that fine, but they have a boat there that he ends up sailing in a regatta toward the end of the movie. And they fix up the boat. I think it's called the Barnacle. And while they are sailing that boat, they are not going to win. They doesn't look like they have a chance of winning that race. And what they discover while they are sailing is that one of the helpers on the boat did not jettison some things that could have been jettisoned. In fact, there's a bunch of Scully's catch of the day, which is some fish sticks down in the freezer in the bottom of the boat. And so they throw out Scully's catch of the day, and then that helps them to move the boat a little faster. And so anytime we have fish sticks, we call it Scully's catch of the day. And so they jettisoned what wasn't needed. Anything that was going to help them to win the race, they were going to throw overboard. And of course, they all looked at John Candy and wanted to throw him overboard too, but he was sailing the ship. But throwing the fish sticks overboard caused them to be able to win the race. And here, the jettisoning of anything that was not necessary was going to help them steady the boat and was going to help them to get rid of that cargo they were carrying. So whatever they could get rid of, whatever was carrying extra weight, they got rid of those things that were not absolutely necessary. So if you go down to verse 38 says, "When they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea." So what this says is that they are throwing away anything that's not important.
And so a storm can help you clarify your values. And we've heard that many times in the last couple of days as the governor of Florida has said it over and over. We can rebuild your houses. We can rebuild whatever gets damaged, but we can't rebuild you. Because he wants people to leave. He wants people to be safe. So he's trying to tell people, here's what's important. Your safety, your physical safety is important. Forget about the material things. And so a storm can cause people to clarify values. And many times in the aftermath of a storm, people will say, well, at least my family is safe. And it may be that the physical things are not safe, but at least my family is. So these kind of events help us to clarify values. It also helps us to clarify our vision. The men on this boat, on the ship, had lost all hope. And they had nothing and no one to turn to except Paul did. And that's really, you know, what God wants. He wants us to turn to Him. And it's been said to realize the worth of an anchor, you have to first encounter the storm. You know, the anchor doesn't seem real important until you need it. And so it's often the storm that teaches us what we really need and understand. And these men understood some things about God because of what Paul said that they may not have understood before. So there can be victory in a storm. Let's look at starting in verse 30 and read through verse 44. I'll start in verse 27. When the 14th night had come, as we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors suspected that they were nearing land, and so they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little further they took a sounding again, found 15 fathoms, and fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down four anchors from the storm and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength. For not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you." And when he had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then all were encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the weed into the sea. Now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and left them in the sea, the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. Then hoisting the foresail of the wind, they made for the beach, but striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow struck and remained unmovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and to make for the land, the rest on planks or on a piece of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. And so it happened just as Paul said that it would, that his God, his Lord, was going to keep them safe and not one of their lives were going to be lost. And there is a song called "A Shelter in a Time of Storm." It says, "Our Lord is our rock in whom we hide, a shelter in the time of storm, secure whatever ill betide, a shelter in the time of storm." So Paul had peace here, and it's because God had revealed this to him, that he was going to be with him. You may have heard the story before about a king who was offering a prize to an artist who would paint the best picture of peace. And many artists tried. The king looked at all the pictures, but there were only two that he
really liked, and he had to choose between them. One picture was a calm lake. The lake was a perfect mirror for peacefulness. You know, there were towering mountains all around it. Overhead was a blue sky and white clouds. And all who saw the picture thought that was the perfect picture of peace. Other picture had mountains too, but these were rugged and bare. And above the mountains, there was an angry, stormy sky, and there was rain. And you could see lightning in the picture. But down the side of the mountain, there was a waterfall, and it didn't look, you know, real peaceful at all. But when you looked at the picture very closely, there was a tiny bush growing in a crack of the rock on the mountain. And in that bush, there was a mother bird who had built her nest. And so there in the midst of the angry water and the angry storm, you know, sat the mother bird on her nest in perfect peace. And so, you know, which one do you think won the prize? Well, the king chose the second picture because he said peace does not mean to be in a place where there's no noise or trouble or hard work. Peace means that in the midst of all those things, you can still be calm. And I thought that was a very interesting way of putting that. I mean, that's the meaning of peace. And so here we have a situation where Paul is at peace because God told him that he could be. And, you know, Psalm 23 is also a picture of peace. You know, the Lord is my shepherd that we sang this morning. That's one of my favorite songs, and it's been around for hundreds of years. But it pictures peace for us. It's a perfect picture of peace. And so we can have shelter and peace when we remember God's presence. I came across this story, and it really, I think Gary may have told it to me before. I'm not sure it in one of his got it out of one of his books of corny jokes or something. So maybe you're the one that told me. Somebody told me this, but I want to read it to you. It's about two mischievous boys, and they were always getting into trouble. And if anything happened in the neighborhood, the parents knew that these boys were involved. And the parents decided to finally take the boys to the preacher who had been dealing with unruly children and been successful at that. So the boys are 8 and 10 years old. The 8-year-old was sent to the preacher first, and the preacher was a huge man with a booming voice, and he sat the boy down and was going to try to put the fear of God in him and tell him, you know, God's always there with you. And he leaned toward the boy and took him by the arms, looked him right in the eyes, and he said with a booming voice, "Where is God?" And the boy didn't say a word. He just sat there with his mouth dropped open. And the preacher asked him again, more sternly, "Where is God?" And the boy didn't respond, and he asked him a third time, "Where is God?" And the boy screamed, and he bolted from the room and ran all the way home, and he ran through the door up the stairs. And his older brother found him cowering in the closet. He said, "What happened?" He said, "We're in big trouble this time. God is missing, and they think we did it." You know. So, you know, there are times when people feel like God is missing. But, you know, he's not. You know, people get into the midst of a storm, and they wonder, "Where is God?" And he's always there, just like these boys needed to remember that God was always there watching whatever it was that they were doing. And the times of people's lives when they feel like God is missing, like Paul told these sailors, you know, he's there, he's going to protect you. And even when you're going through some kind of hardship or some kind of storm, whether it be a financial difficulty, a physical difficulty, some kind of sickness or something going on in your family that you don't know how to handle, whatever it might be, is that we have to be reminded that God is in control and He's aware of what is going on. And so we can have shelter and peace relying in God's promises. Look at verses 24 and 25 again. Verses 24 and 25. And he said, Paul said, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God
has granted you all those who sail with you. So please take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told."
So Paul reminded them, or told them, that it's going to be okay, because when God makes a promise, it's something that is very sure, it's very certain, and we can depend on it, even with our lives, like Paul was doing here. And so it says that there were some that when they jumped ship, you know, some were on board, some were on broken pieces of the ship, but it says it came to pass that they all escaped. They all escaped safe to land. Just as Paul had declared in verse 22 that nobody was going to lose their life, because he had a divine promise that that was going to happen. And there were people that were plotting against those on the ship that were prisoners, that they were going to kill them. But Paul believed God. And, you know, one thing that's interesting here is that they went through a period of time where they didn't even know where they were. You know, they couldn't see the moon. They couldn't see the stars. And, you know, when sometimes people are in complete darkness, it's that they lose all sense of hope and all sense of faith. But that's a time that we really need to trust in God. Because now our faith should be something that is a shield for us, that when the storm comes, that we can survive it. And so, you know, those are things that chapter 27 of Acts, I think, helps us, because it challenges us. It challenges us to trust in God's promises. We say it a lot, especially when it comes to political things and other things that go on in our society, that it's a constant reminder that God is in control, and that why do we get so upset about things that we see in the world? I understand why we sometimes, you know, wring our hands about certain things that are going on, and we want things to be different, and we wonder what's the world coming to. But you know, here's an example of that God can be trusted, that things are in His control. And whatever it is in our life, you know, we know that God knows what He is doing. We also are told to trust in God's promises, that He cares about us. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, Peter tells us to cast all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. And so, you know, that's something that gives us a lot of peace, or should give us a lot of peace in our lives. There's also a story about two men who were talking about the experiences that they had with difficulties in trusting God. And one said, "It's terribly hard to trust God in the dark." And the other man answered and said, "If you can't trust a man when he's out of your sight, then he's not worth that much. And if you can't trust God in the dark, it just shows that you don't trust Him at all." And I thought that kind of sums up the way some people see God. You know, as long as everybody can see what's right in front of them, and they can see the path, and everything's clearly defined, you know, that's great. But when things are not so settled and not so sure, that's when your faith is really tested in God, when you don't really see what's coming. And so today, in the past few days, we've had people doing the best that they can to prepare for something that they're not really sure of what's going to happen. Yet those that trust in God can be at peace. Job chapter 23, verse 10 says, "He knows the way that I take. When He's tried me, I shall come forth as gold." Now, I like that summation of the things that, you know, Job went through in his life, because he certainly was tested in ways that probably none of us will ever be tested. But it shows, number one, his faith in God. Number two, that when after he's finished trying me, I'm going to come out as gold. And so it's a great statement of faith. So if there
are the proverbial storms in our life. They can be something that try our faith. But as God worked it out for Paul in Acts chapter 27, He works those things out for those that are faithful to Him. So let's remember that. And I hope that'll be an encouragement to you, especially at this time as we see these kind of things going on. If in any way you don't have that peace that we described tonight, that peace only comes from being a child of God and being faithful to Him. If you need that peace, it comes by being His child. If we can help you in any way to do that, we'd invite you to come. Always stand and sing.